Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. It's Wednesday. Welcome to the show. A lot going on today. We're thrilled that you're here. We're thrilled that you're listening.
I'm shocked at the results of the good old
election.
Putin election? No, that one I'm not surprised.
That one's still 2 days later. I still can't believe that Vladimir Putin won. Boy, anything can happen.
I thought I was going to get thrown out of the precinct yesterday.
Did you? Why?
Well, because Michael, my son, had never voted in an election before, and he had questions that he wanted to ask me, and I was looking at him, and I'm like, Michael, I don't think I can come into your little booth
here. You cannot.
Nope. I said, I don't think we're supposed to talk.
Right. It's cheating.
But I'm glad I did. I went there, and because he's like, what do I do here? And I said, I'm not telling you who to vote for. And he just didn't understand, like, if it was uncontested, what do you do? It mm-hmm. is kind of confusing. And then I said, you got to read the fine print, because at one point it's like vote for three. And he just he was very proud of himself for voting and felt really high and mighty walking out of there. He had his red, white, and blue Gibson guitar shirt on. I'm like, why didn't you wear an Uncle Sam hat?
Did they have a costume prize at your polling place?
No, he just so happened to wear the red, white, and blue Gibson guitar shirt that day. And then he got his little sticker.
Yeah.
And then he wanted to take a picture pointing like Uncle Sam did. Oh. And I said, this is really... But
he's
I do
patriotic.
Remember the first time I voted. It was pretty exciting. You feel like a real legitimate adult for one time in your life.
I guess so.
And you realize your vote doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's that. Anytime there was any confusion yesterday, what I did is I just voted for Fritz Kagi.
Do you know his name kept going in my head because of you?
I love that name. That's the coolest name.
He didn't have to spend a dollar on advertising because you kept saying that all day yesterday.
It sounds like something a guy would get hit in, like if he was playing softball, you'd go, ooh, right in the Fritz Kagi. Doesn't it? Ooh, that guy right in the Fritz Kagi.
Because it sounds like a Kegel exercise. It does. It does. I'm sure.
You look great. Well, I'm going to Fritz Kagi.
It's a throwback to the, back when long time ago, there would be, when much more segregated, and there'd be the black office, the white office, the Polish office, and each sort of ethnic group or race was sort of taken care of by having a particular office that they always got.
Yep.
And Fritz Kagi is just a blowback to the name.
Those great days.
Not that he didn't earn the win, but I mean to the names of those eras.
Bill left money.
Wendy, I voted a street Fritz Kagi ticket. I voted for him for everything. Water reclamation, he's in. Librarian, he's in. Lifeguard, he's in. I just wanted him to win everything.
It's really weird, though, to go in your polling place, and there was a young whippersnapper this year, and I feel the need to say young whippersnapper.
Because he was.
You're used to seeing the older women.
Yes.
And an occasional guy.
Yes.
This guy was a young person, and he couldn't find my name, and I said, well, it's in there, trust me, I'm in the right precinct. And then they found my son's name, and I said, well, then I'm pretty sure it's in here, we have the same last name.
Yeah.
But now here's my question, if you have a Mick or Mac name, sometimes the people who put in records put MC space, and some people don't. So Michael had no space, I had no space, and this young whippersnapper named Will Wheaton was telling me, there's nothing I can do. I said, yes, there is. Look me up. I'm in there. I've come to this place.
Right.
Come on. Can someone vouch for me?
Let me vote. I want to vote for
they
Fritz
They found
Kagi.
Me because of the space.
This is weird for me. I say, and Steve, you might have to help me with this. As far as my records show, only one Holocaust denier won yesterday. Is that correct? Only one? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, he was
Arthur Jones, he was unopposed, but still.
Uncontested, is that it?
You can contest him. It was he ran unopposed.
I can't think of the word.
On a Balaval.
Yes.
He was on a Balaval.
Isn't that a hoot and a half? And Marie Newman did not win, and Dan Lipinski did.
That was a very close race.
It was, but it just shows you how if you go out there and vote, and the whole J.B. Pritzker thing, he won... because no one could make up their mind between Chris Kennedy and Daniel Biss, so I think they split their votes and all the other ones went there.
That's a very, there's got to be something to that. I'm sure you saw Daniel Biss's concession speech. It was one of the better concession speeches I've ever heard.
I did not.
Because I don't know if he knows what's next for him, but he really talked about how, you know, this is a good, I don't know, it is a good thing, but it's not going to help him. He didn't win.
Yeah.
But he really talked about how, you know, this is a movement toward the future, and all signs seem to be heading upwards.
He's
it was
too
very
nice.
Positive.
You know, that's interesting because Chris Kennedy, I thought, gave a very good concession
His
speech,
was good, too.
I mean, it was clearly written. It was thoughtful. It was pro-Pritzker, pro-Democratic Party.
Isn't it surprising how positive both of those were?
They lost.
They had time to prepare, I think.
I guess you're right, Steve.
But is it better? I guess it's better served to go out positive than bitter, right? Like
you would
think there'd be some bitterness, but it didn't show up in either speech.
Remember, it's a primary, so the idea is you still have a common foe ahead.
Yeah, right. True.
It's not like you're a Republican losing to a Democrat or Democrat to a Republican, so there's that.
Yeah.
And what I learned from The Voice last night is that when two people are competing, they're teamed up, and only one can win by the celebrities that choose them, but then someone else can steal the person. So if they concede and say, oh, it was just an honor to be part of this, someone's going to reward them for their good behavior. So later on down the road, maybe Daniel Biss and Chris Kennedy.
Some position.
Yeah, maybe. Or just maybe next 4 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, I guess.
In this day and age of bitterness and mean people all over the place, isn't it refreshing to hear somebody go, yeah.
I was thinking exactly that during both of those speeches. It's like I really expected a lot more vinegary tone to both speeches, but they both seemed very and through their support, you know, to Pritzker, which I guess is the thing to do.
Well, what can you do? See, that's the thing.
Yeah, I
guess
you
can't cry over spilled milk.
Right.
Boy, I don't like him, you know. Well, I should. It's, you know what? You concede, you lost,
right.
And you go, okay, thanks for your votes and your support.
Now, when we come back, let's talk about, it's Chicago politics, so there's going to be some whammy thrown in there.
Oh, are you going to vote again during the commercial
I'm going to vote now. I'm going to go out and vote for Fritz Kagi again. I'm
he
not done
owes
voting
you
for
money.
Him. I'm not done voting for Fritz Kagi.
That's all I heard in my head on the way home and at the polling place. That's all I heard.
Yeah.
Was your little voice going,
Fritz Kagi. Last night, I was up at the Kagi Kegger till 3:15 a.m., Wendy. It closed down around 3:15 a.m., and what a crazy time we had. The Pabst Blue Ribbon was flowing all night long. But
I thought it was a Blatz. I thought Fritz was a Blatz guy.
He enjoys the Blatz, too. He had a special reserve behind the bar for his closer friends. But let's take a look at the woman who's... We were told if you were going to vote for her, your vote would not count.
Yeah,
and
how
that
about
was
this?
Insane. So let's cover that just a little bit when we come back. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. All right, so this woman, now, I don't understand how such a thing could happen. But again, it's Chicago, so the rules are a little crazy sometimes.
Well, there were a lot of mistakes involved in this whole issue.
This is the woman, Andrea Raglia, who was running for assessor. And we all know who won that.
Fritz Kagi.
And
Berrios is out.
Berrios is done.
Yep.
But now this woman, Andrea Raglia, and John Williams discussed this a little bit on his show yesterday.
I heard that.
I'm sure you did the same. You're driving home and listening to John. So he asked judges, because as you entered your polling place, you were told, or there were banners up or signs up saying, if you vote for her, the
pamphlet.
Vote will not count. A pamphlet, right? A green pamphlet.
Yes.
Right? The vote will not count. So people just assumed, well, I'm in a polling place being told that she's off the ballot, so it must be true.
Because of legal reasons.
Yeah. But then it turns out it was not true, that if you did vote for her, those votes would count. And what happens now?
Well, I would demand a recount for sure.
Not a recount, I would say.
A re-vote.
Yeah, wouldn't you think?
Yes, because from what I understand, and Steve is not there to jump in and assist us.
Yeah, he's hiding under the desk.
God, when we need
That's what
him
he
most.
Does. Yeah.
From my understanding, the ballot was given out along with a piece of paper that said it was too late to pull her off the ballot. Her vote will not count. Don't waste your vote. And then I heard.
Do we know why?
Yes, there was some legal action that.
So her signatures were challenged by Fritz Kagi.
You have to have a certain amount of signatures to get yourself on the ballot, and he or his office felt that some of those were obtained illegally? Is that what it was?
Or they were made up. I don't really know the particulars, but it's routine. And it's not routine that someone gets knocked off, but they sided against her. So then they said, well, she's off the ballot. Her name was already on a lot of the ballots, so the city elections board printed up these flyers saying her votes don't count. She then went to an appellate court. The appellate court sided with her, So the flyers saying her votes don't count were now moot. So the city printed out flyers that said her votes do count.
Hmm.
And the problem is they put up the wrong flyers in some polling stations.
Yes. And I also heard, I don't know if it was somebody from the Chicago Board of Elections who was also on either with John Williams or Roe, but they had texted, they emailed people saying, you know, she is good to go on the ballot, so go ahead and vote for her. Let people know, rather, that they could vote for her. And I heard this gentleman say, we also sent a text out that said, you know, it's no longer a non-issue. She will be on the ballot.
Was that text sent to potential voters?
No, to the judges.
To the judges.
But then I also heard that the wrong text was sent. Did you hear this?
I don't know about that. But, you know, John went to his polling place in the city, and the flyers were up saying the votes didn't count.
It's still at 1 o'clock.
And he
No. I'm sorry.
This was at 9 o'clock when he did it.
Sorry.
And did he say three judges, Steve? Did he talk to?
He said, I talked to Andrea. She said the votes count. And he talked to three different judges who disagreed with him. And then at 1 o'clock, someone called and said they were still in a polling place
where the signs were up.
Yeah.
Now, see, if I were her, seriously, I would demand some kind of re-election just for that office.
Right.
Well, she can request it, and I don't know the election law of it all, but you know, she would have to make a case that the mistakes took from her a chance to win. And, you know, that there'd be a burden of proof there, I would think.
But she was pretty far down. Okay, Fritz was way ahead of her.
Yeah, but I mean, he may well have taken a lot of votes that she would have gotten.
Yeah,
so.
I guess that's hard.
But
to
Steve,
think.
If that's the argument, all you have to do is say potential voters, regardless of who they were going to vote for, you know, any of the candidates, are told point blank: if you vote for her, your vote is a wasted vote; it doesn't count. I would think that's almost all the evidence you'd need. I would think.
Well, okay, but consider the extreme where there's a clown who's running who was only going to get two votes.
Yeah.
And
an
elections judge told the voters that the votes for Andy the Clown wouldn't count.
Yeah.
A judge isn't going to order a brand new election
for
someone who had no chance of winning at all.
Okay.
Right. So if she could, I would imagine she would have to prove, then, and she may have a case, damages that she had a chance of winning had they not made this mistake.
Hey,
would you go up against Fritz Kagi? I wouldn't.
Not in the Kagi era.
No.
We have an election judge on the line. Jim, you worked the election yesterday?
Yes, I'm not an election judge. I work for a company that provides election support.
Emotional support?
Yes.
Election support, I'm sorry.
No, that's what you said.
What do you make of all this, Jim?
After speaking with the county clerk that I worked with side by side yesterday, downstate Illinois, we were watching this, and it was our opinion that this was what's called electioneering. Technically, no judge or party should be telling anybody who they can or cannot vote for at the polling place. If the person is on the ballot, voters have the right to vote for that person. And
well, the problem here, though,
but wait, hang
that's
on.
Not quite the case here, because this... there was a time when her name was on the ballot, but she wasn't an eligible candidate. So you could see where in that case it would be a service to voters to say, look, there's this oval here, but she's not a legal candidate, so you shouldn't vote.
Don't waste
your vote.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying, but you also have to take a look at the attorney general race. There was a gentleman who was on and off the ballot four times before he was finally on the ballot. This is something that does not happen that often. It's pretty rare. But if they're on the ballot, you do have the right to vote for them. And to be quite honestly, it's illegal for anybody, whether it be a judge, election judge, or a supporter of that candidate, to be within 100 feet of the polling place entrance and tell you who you can or cannot vote for.
Yeah. Unless they're taken off the ballot, which in this case, at one point, she was.
And the judges were acting on the instruction of the City Board of Elections, so they weren't. It wasn't like rogue action, unless it was.
You're right, but the City Board of Elections also admitted that they screwed up, that should have never been done, and that's where the problem comes in. This is something that, technically, it's electioneering, and I think that this woman has an absolute right to file suit and have a special election called for this race.
I agree. May I throw something else into the mix?
I don't think there's a judge that will deny that, to be quite honest with you.
Maybe, Steve, you can answer this, but some texter said, what about those who voted in the early voting? Was her name on the ballot?
Yeah, it would have been, and then it would not have been. It's one of the hazards of early voting.
See?
How would this not have been solved prior to Election Day? Shouldn't this have been solved weeks ago?
Well, you mean as far as the court resolution?
No, just the legality of her being on the ballot. You know?
Well, it has to go through the courts, Bill, and it wound its way up to the appellate court, and I think they ruled on it, I think it was a couple of weeks ago. You know, and then you've got the poor guys, Jim Allen was on yesterday in the City Board of Elections. They've got to print all these different ballots, which are, you know, I don't know how many different ones there are, but by precinct or by ward, or and get them to the polling places, get the judges trained, all while these challenges continue. So it doesn't happen very often, but it did yesterday.
But Jim, in closing, your thought is that she has a legitimate gripe. If you're Andrea Raley, you say...
Don't you think so? I think she does.
I do think
absolutely.
She does. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely she does. You know, I agree with some of what Steve is saying, but you have to realize, my company creates the ballots for some of these smaller counties in Southern Illinois, and I go back to the person who was running for Attorney General, was on and off the ballot 4 different times because he was appealing things, kicked off, appealed, got back on, and that created our problems for our company that we were unable to create ballots for these Southern Illinois counties until, you know, almost a week and a half before the election. That's, like I said, it's rare, but this woman has an honest-to-God legitimate gripe for a special election vote for her race.
Yeah, I think
and
so,
it
too.
Be granted to her.
Yep.
Thank you very much,
Jim. Thanks, Jim.
Good work. I have a great idea to correct this.
Yeah.
They do have electronic machines. I was unable to use those at my precinct yesterday because they broke down. But there is some way to put, you know, at the airport when they do updates on flight arrivals, couldn't there be some electronic board that gives you an update of the ballot as you walk in?
You would imagine.
I mean, how great of an idea is that? Because then there could just be a little scrolling thing that said update to ballot, and then everybody would have it.
I like that idea. That seems doable.
Who do I sell that to, and how much is
Fritz
it worth?
Fritz Kagi.
Fritz Kagi
won't
want it.
You want to talk to Fritz
it.
Kagi.
He won. He doesn't want the contestant.
You'd be surprised. He'll shock you sometimes,
Wendy. Are you going to just answer Fritz Kagi for everything?
I'm going to try to, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Fritz Kagi will join us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and I'm very proud to introduce you to a coworker of ours. You work in sales. Her name is Beth Jacobellis, and you have written a book?
I've written a book, and...
I want to write a book. I've been trying to write a book about ADHD.
But you can't because...
I have ADHD.
Yeah, that's the catch.
I can't... I don't know where to start. And really, that is a major symptom of ADHD, is you can't begin
something.
You start
with the foreword, don't you? Isn't that the best place to start?
Well, I had no idea how I was going to actually write a book. But I knew since I was a little girl that I wanted to write a book. And when I was at WGN Radio back in 2001 to 2006.
Yeah.
And then I quit to stay home with my kids for a couple of years. And my whole reason was to basically see how it would be to stay home, you know, with them. But also I really wanted to write a book.
Oh.
But again,
have you always been a writer?
I've always written.
Like English
short
was your favorite
stories.
Class and you loved compositions.
I would definitely say math was not my strong suit, nor would science be, but English was.
And yet you have written a math textbook, Beth. Who expected that from you? Not me.
Who knew? Who knew? But now everyone does. But it was something that I had said I wanted to do, and I didn't want to be one of those people that would say, I wanted to write a book and never do it.
Oh, this is pointed toward you, Wendy. She directly pointed that toward you.
Well, if you wrote a book, don't you have, you like toys, what would you write a book about?
Good Night, Moon.
It's been written.
What? All the good ideas are taken.
Can I just tell you, writing a children's book is the way to go because it doesn't have to be very long.
It takes you 16 minutes. You're in and out. So did the idea for what your book would be, did it change a lot over the years? I bet it did.
Yes, it did. I have always had a... very strong belief in past lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, that we've lived through many lifetimes. And if you know me and you're a close friend of mine,
yeah,
you would understand that I've continuously tried to convince everybody I know that this is true.
Bill will never believe you.
I don't believe it.
I will.
I agree.
But we've all been reincarnated, that we all used to be somebody else. And normally people who have that belief always think that you were somebody famous hundreds or thousands of years ago. Do you believe that?
Or an Egyptian princess.
Or an Egyptian princess.
I was Nefertiti.
That's the main thing.
You were her?
I put the teat in Nefertiti.
Wendy is a shock.
Many years ago.
Wendy is a shock.
Yeah. So you would like to think you were somebody extremely important,
right,
in those.
What about an animal? Maybe I was an animal.
I believe that. I don't believe the reincarnated from a human, but I do think Wendy was a warthog or a panther.
A warthog? Why do you go there?
I'm just saying.
Or a grasshopper.
My God.
So we were all descendants of Cleopatra somehow. That's the belief.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. You right. would like. So I've always been fascinated with this. And again, yeah, I've tried to convince people, but most people think you're crazy when you talk about it.
Do you hang out with Jennifer Weigel? I'm just asking because you should.
I do want to talk with her because I think we look at life
pretty much
the exact same way.
She's reincarnated.
Hey, maybe we were friends in a past life.
She was Scatman Crothers. Is that weird?
Again, who are you?
I'm sorry you work with us.
Well, I didn't know all this was going on down here in the studio.
Yeah.
We're completely sheltered upstairs. Yep. But
Scatman Crothers.
Yeah.
Good God, y'all.
So your thought was, I'll write a book about this, about reincarnation and about coming back, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But
is there a twist?
There is a little bit of a twist. So the one thing, along with believing in past lives, is I do believe that there are connections that are so strong between people that they continuously find each other time and time again.
Oh.
I believe that 100%.
That's interesting.
So you would call this a soulmate.
Yeah.
And Cameo is about this journey.
Have you yourself experienced what you're discussing with us? Have you fallen in love with somebody that you were in love with hundreds or thousands of years ago?
Maybe once.
Maybe once.
Does it have to be someone you're in love with? Because a soulmate could be someone that you just are kindred spirits. You just really feel a unique bond, yet it's maybe just a platonic soulmate. Is that a possibility?
Yes. I believe that a soulmate can be anybody that when you meet, you just immediately feel comfortable. You click. And it could also be somebody that you don't click with, that challenges you, that makes you feel indifferent.
Bill makes me a better person.
Yeah.
Hence why you're so.
Keep going.
Hence why you're together.
That's all I got. No, there's no but.
All right.
So I think it could go both ways, but definitely friendship.
Yeah.
Can be a soulmate connection. And if you really want to get into details, you could be traveling with a soul group throughout many lifetimes. And people around you could be people that you've come across before. Yes.
I wonder, though, because, see, now I can get deep just like you, all right? If you meet someone and you instantly click with them, when we were put together on the air, honestly, mm-hmm. I had worked with, they kept running me through so many different partners, mm-hmm. and Bill and I were put together, and it really just kind of clicked. It was really, we don't like each other off the air,
no,
but on the air, it's amazing.
It's fun.
But now I wonder, though, he doesn't believe in any of this, but if you meet someone that you click with, I have this feeling that maybe you've met somewhere before in a different time or place.
Yes.
Is that too deep for you, Bill?
That is way too deep for me. Although I do think you and I were Roman soldiers together at some point, as a side note.
That is a great visual.
Yeah.
Was I a guy?
Yeah. Back then, that was a long time ago.
And that's the other thing. You could have been a man or a woman. Oh. I was actually told, aside from being an Egyptian princess, that I was a male Native American Indian.
Oh.
Who was a healer for a whole.
That's pretty cool.
Time. Yeah, oh. I know.
Bill watches The View. Okay. Maybe
yeah,
you
I do
were
watch The View.
A woman in
when,
an earlier
when
life.
When you learn something like that about yourself, Beth, do you have to change your resume right away or do you just accept it?
No, basically, I probably need to not tell anyone about it.
Because people will look at you sideways, right? If you say, "Here, oh, I just found out this about me a long time ago. I was th-" people go, "Oh,
again,
I don't know what to do with that."
Most people think you're completely crazy.
Sure.
So what I thought I would do to try to get how I felt out was to actually write an entire book about it, because that way people could read about it.
Yes.
And then think about it themselves.
Yeah.
So
you present a full case that way. You don't just say it.
Case.
It's all there.
195-page
wow,
case study of past lives. But a lot of it does involve a love story between two people. And
the best love stories are often between two,
not three people.
Yep.
And
you need to love yourself first.
No, that's true. Wendy brings up a good point. Yeah.
Yes. And that, and these two people were together in a past life and it was cut short.
Yeah.
And then they found each other in the present.
Oh, that's
lifetime.
Excellent. Now that sounds very appealing.
So that is the premise of the story.
Yeah. All right.
This is also put together. The book is called Cameo, and you have a book signing, which we'll talk about. This is put together by Eckhart's Press, which Rick Kempfer is behind. And Rick, the first book you ever did, was that the Radio Producer's Handbook? Because you were a producer for Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer.
Yes, that's the first book I did.
It was a really good book, the Radio Producer's Handbook. But everything's changed because everything's easier for producers now than when you did it.
Yes, that's right. That was before the internet.
Right.
Yeah, we used to walk uphill both ways to work.
Yes,
day.
And if you needed sound, you had to actually watch a movie, rent the movie, and put the sound together. You couldn't just go to YouTube and, you know, Google whatever it is you wanted from Michael Scott.
Yeah, that's true. And kids who want to become producers today, I used to have to go to the library to research guests. Mm-hmm. So if we had like a Beth Jacobellis coming in, I'd have to go in to the library and find out more about her that way.
You were good with microfiche, weren't you?
I was.
And then you did a parent book, too, Father Knows.
Father Knows Nothing.
Yes.
That's
really
good.
And most recently, Doing the Cruise, the Mitch Michaels book, and various other people.
And Bobby Skafish.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. John Records Landecker.
Yes.
And when Wendy eventually writes her book, you will assist on that, I hope.
If she ever takes care of that ADD problem, we'll be fine.
I'm working on a sticker fund book, Rick. Can you help me with that?
I can.
All right, good.
They make adult coloring books. Why wouldn't they make adult sticker fund books?
I'm all in. I love it.
I think it's a great idea. Okay. So Beth Jacobellis is here. The book is called Cameo. She works here. It's all put out through Eckhart's Press. You can follow them on Facebook at Eckhart's Press. And we will talk about your appearance, Beth, when we return. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Two former Roman guards, right?
Yeah.
Is that what
Roman
we were?
Roman soldiers.
Oh, sorry.
A long time ago.
720 WGN. All right. There's a new book out and about. You can find it at eckhartspress.com, E-C-K-H-A-R-T-Z press.com. Or you can go to a book signing, which is happening this Friday in Chicago. Beth Jacobellis is here. The book is called Cameo. It's available for pre-order now. Pre-order right now. And tell us about your book signing. Where's this going to happen?
It's going to be at Teasers in Chicago, and they're at 7123 Higgins Road. And it will be at 7 o'clock on Friday night, so March 23rd until 10 o'clock.
You've never done one of these. Are you excited? It must be pretty exciting.
I have never done any of this.
Yeah.
So it is very exciting.
I bet it is.
Exciting and scary all the
Beth,
same
Beth, go
time.
Back just a little bit to segment one, when you said that somebody, a soothsayer, told you that in a past life, you were with an American Indian tribe. You were like the healer of the tribe, right? So what did they do?
A shaman.
A shaman, if you will, Wendy.
I will.
What? Please, don't squeeze the shaman. What did they see in you, or what did they ask you? Like, what transpired that made them know all this about you?
I honestly have absolutely no idea, and there is no proof.
Yeah.
Except when people say, "Oh, you had lived before, you lived a past life," and.
But are they like? Are they holding your hand? Or are they just staring you in the eye? What happens when they go, "Oh, I know something about you from hundreds of years ago"?
Holding your hand.
That's what
I
it
would
is.
Say.
It's a vibration.
It's a vibration. Through.
Interesting.
again, who knows? We hope. We
but,
hope.
But it was credible enough to where you said, "Oh, that's very possible. Maybe I was right." You believed it.
It could be because the one thing that I do feel is that I have always another reason I wrote the book is I've wanted to provide an explanation or comfort to people who've had really horrible things happen to them.
Yeah.
And you continuously hear, you know, terrible things happen to good people.
Sure.
And I've known several people throughout my life who have definitely died too young or unexpectedly. And that's
the basis of this kind of
that. I feel that if you believe that you have lived and it's more of a cycle of life as opposed to you've lived your entire life, then you pass away, and then nothing, and then everything's over.
Right.
I feel like your soul comes back, you know, over and over
it
again.
It recycles. Yeah, all right.
Goodwill should sponsor that.
I don't know why they don't.
Which, by the way, text came in, Beth, would hate to be interviewed by Bill and Wendy. Let the guest speak about her book instead of constantly interrupting and making lame jokes.
That's a good idea.
However, someone has texted, Scatman Crothers, not in a million years would you have believed anyone would have the opportunity to throw down that name. Bill, you are my hero today.
Well, thank you.
And I wish I knew who that was, but I actually don't. So
he was in, was it The Shining?
Well, he's been in a lot of great movies, but I think his greatest work is he's the voice of Hong Kong Phooey. So
it's not.
But
I'm really
clear now.
Sorry.
Yeah,
so did we cover really though that because this says inspired by a true story? Tell us the true parts of it.
So there was something that inspired me that happened back in 1994. I don't want to give too much detail. However, it was something that happened to a lot of people I know in the radio industry. And this tragedy affected and altered the lives of several people. And it was something that, again, going back to the whole bringing comfort to understanding why people die so young.
Yeah.
And this is part of the book. I don't want to give too much away because it is, you know, it's pretty much the climax of the book,
mm-hmm.
you know, what happens. But in talking with these people, you know, and how it affected them so profoundly, it really kind of fed into how I look at life and how it's something that is not final, that to really try to believe when people are gone from your life, their soul is not gone.
Right.
And in that way, to bring comfort to people who have lost people too soon.
Do you consider yourself religious, spiritual, somewhere in the middle? I don't know what the difference is. I always hear people say, oh, you're religious, but you're not spiritual, the other way around. I don't know what the difference is.
I think there is a big difference. I was never raised with any religion.
No.
My dad is Jewish and my mom is Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to church because my uncle was a minister.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wanted my children to be raised a religion and they are being raised Catholic. My ex-husband was Catholic. So I do believe that it is important to have faith.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think maybe the reason I believe the way I do is because I have never been influenced in any way from religion.
So you felt that was lacking in your life and wanted to change that with your kids.
Yes, yes. And I just wanted to, because again, going back to bad things happen, I think when bad things happen, you do need to have faith.
Right.
You need to feel that there is something greater than you.
That's probably why it was invented originally.
Originally,
right?
Agreed.
It's a cushion. You know, to absorb whatever bad things happen, you have that to rely on. So
yes.
That's probably why they came up with it.
Yes, yeah. Agreed.
Inspired by a true story, it's Cameo. It's Beth Jacobellis. Jacobellis?
Jacobellis.
Jacobellis.
I think it goes both ways.
In a former life, how did you pronounce it? There's a book signing party for Beth Jacobellis. It's this Friday night, March 23rd, at Teasers, 7123 West Higgins Avenue in Chicago. 7 o'clock, you'll be there?
7 o'clock.
You bring in a couple of Sharpies?
I think I will do that.
You can also pre-order now at eckhartspress.com. You can just Google it, Cameo, the book, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much for
having me. We're proud of you.
Thank you.
Don't tell us what it is, but you already have a second book in your head, don't you? I can tell.
I do.
I know.
Scatman Crothers.
Do that one. I will pre-order that today.
I am running upstairs and looking that up.
All right, please do. Thank you, Beth. We're very proud of you.
Thank you, Rick Comfort.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Thanks, Rick. I will take a quick break, then some news, then more. Show Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, Dr. John Duffy is here in studio, but before we talk to John, I have a very, very big surprise for you.
Oh!
At 11:35... right here on this show, you and I will be chatting with Fritz Kagi.
I knew this was going to happen.
Isn't that exciting?
For you.
The man of the hour, the man of the world, Fritz Kagi will be joining us, and we'll talk about all things Fritz Kagi with him at 11:35.
He owes you money.
I've been saying his name a lot. I enjoy saying his
name.
You
got into my head at the polling place yesterday, and my son's head.
Yep.
He owes you some kind of royalty or something.
We'll see what he's going to give me.
All right, cool.
Probably appoint me to some office.
Good job, Jasmine. Yeah, right. The office of fun.
I wouldn't be surprised if I'm named Commissioner of Fun. Hi, John.
Hi, Bill.
Dr. John Duffy is here to join us. Now, we're going to talk about something that isn't fun, but we're going to talk about how to fix it, and that's negativity.
How to make it more fun, right. Yeah. Right, so... one thing I find in my practice that I don't think we've really spent enough time talking about here is how most of us have this negative self-chatter, this internal monologue that is negative, typically about ourselves, usually around the theme of, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not doing well enough. I'm not losing enough weight. I don't have the right job. I'm not making enough money. Some negative criticism, not good looking enough. Mm-hmm. And we carry that, and it's a really powerful set of messages that we really experience subconsciously. And then we fail to act on our own behalf because we kind of convince ourselves without really thinking consciously about it, I'm probably not worth my time and energy.
I don't deserve it anyway.
I don't deserve it anyway, so why would I? And so we do an awful lot for other people. We'll tell other people when they say, I just feel lousy about myself. We'll spend hours telling them how wonderful they are. We will give them a laundry list of great things about themselves. But to change that script internally, that's hard.
That is a strange concept.
It is.
It doesn't make sense.
It makes total sense to me. You don't have like.
Why does it make sense to you? Because I'm baffled by it.
Because I think it's a guy girl thing a little bit. Women are nurturers. So if someone comes to us and says, you know, oh, I'm not feeling good about myself today, I will take all the time in the world to pump them up and go, oh my God, you got so much going for you. Yeah. And then I stop and listen to myself talk and go, if only I could practice what I preach.
Right. Right.
And that's really what it is. I think confidence, women have less of it because they spend more time trying to pump other people up. Is it a guy-girl thing? Maybe I'm over...
No, I think there's some element of that. I think sometimes the male confidence is kind of this pumped up ego confidence, but not necessarily do we feel any better about ourselves.
Okay.
We just convince
like
ourselves.
Like false bravado?
Yes,
kind of?
Exactly.
John, I don't know that I would separate this as a man-woman thing, but I would feel comfortable separating this as an American versus the rest of the world thing. I bet that this goes on much more in the United States than it does in other parts of the world. Canada, does it?
No doubt. 100% true.
Yeah.
Yes. Just like depression and anxiety are more prevalent here, where we have just about everything we could possibly need.
Yeah.
Than anywhere else on the planet, including third world countries where people are starving. But they don't, the way it was explained to me one time is in a lot of parts of the world, they don't have the luxury of feeling terrible about themselves. They have to survive.
Sure.
You know, we have this luxury of thinking about ourselves in that third person, and we often think negatively. And part of it's this onset of social media that I think is like amplifying it, but it was here long before that.
So you would say if you had to separate this nature or nurture, this is learned behavior. We're not born with this kind of self-loathing or feeling that we can't accomplish things. That comes over time, doesn't
Correct.
It?
Correct. It's a strange thing that we do as children because we get a lot of messages about ourselves, some of them positive, some of them negative. But I've noticed in the kids I work with and in my thinking about myself as a child, my siblings, that we tend to internalize hardest the ones that are negative, the ones that are harshest.
Yeah.
And the good stuff tends to kind of roll off our backs like, maybe that's just my parents telling me I'm a good kid or my teacher telling me I'm smart when they don't really believe that.
But when you get, you know, the criticism, that's when you internalize it and really own it. And that becomes part of your psyche.
That makes total sense. And then, you know, we've talked about this before on the air, and I think with you, and if not, I'm sure we did. When you have a vacation and everything goes great, it's a great vacation, and you move on to the next one. When something goes wrong or goofy, or those are the memories you say, oh, remember that trip to Disney when Dylan had lice, and we called it Disney on Lice. Remember that? But we went four other times that were great, but we remember that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely, when things don't go smoothly, we remember the negative, no doubt about it. But in situations like that, Wendy, I think that's really adaptive and great, you know, because that creates kind of the fabric of the family lore, which I think is great. The problem with this is it's insidious and it owns us, you know. It owns the way we think about ourselves moment to moment and day to day in ways that we are not aware of. So I always push people like, and right now, the listeners now, think about how you think about yourself and give yourself a break. Give yourself, you know, a moment of consideration of what you're grateful for about yourself, not about somebody else, because that's easy. Not about, you know, the external elements of your life, but about you specifically.
There's a word that I absolutely hate and that I say about myself all the time, and you can be aware of this, Bill, and you'll attest to this. Mm. Lazy. I hate that word.
Yeah.
My whole life I've been called lazy because school was pretty easy for me when I was younger, and then I went away to Illinois State for a while and couldn't get on their radio station there. So I quit before I got kicked out. Yes, I'll admit that. Went to Triton College because I knew I could be on the radio station. I knew I wanted to be on the air. I found the quickest way to get there.
Right.
But everyone's like, oh, you're lazy. You took the easy way out. Is that lazy?
No. No. In fact, I remember being in a colleague's office, and on a bookshelf, I saw a book titled The Myth of Laziness. And for about 4 hours, I sat there reading this book, but the title kind of says it all. Lazy isn't really a thing. I don't think it's a character trait. I don't think it's anything we really are.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we opt out because we lack some confidence, and that looks like lazy.
Yeah.
A lot of kids who seem lazy now, and it happens more with boys than girls, they're recognizing their peers are super stressed out trying to get A's and AP classes and all this stuff, and they step back in part recognizing, ooh, I don't want to play that game. I don't want to be stressed out like that.
Right.
So I'll take whatever looks like lazy over that.
John, I saw that same book, but I didn't want to have to walk all the way over and pick the book up and open the book.
It's a lot of work.
But that's one of those words that my mom used a lot with me, and that is one that I hate to hear, but I refer to myself as that all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so lazy. Huh. I'm really not.
Well, and think about if we give our kids that message, and maybe you can attest to this, Wendy, it gives us that license to say,
like,
oh,
why try?
I can't do it. I'm lazy. This is a thing I am.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
right?
You label yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. John Duffy is here. We're talking about negativity. Much of it self-imposed. How do you handle it? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dr. John Duffy is here. We're talking about negativity and how many of us bring it on ourselves. John, you know I play a lot of tennis, and over the years I've played 30 or 40 guys who during a match will get down on themselves vocally.
Yeah.
You know, come on, Ed, get your head in the game. What's wrong with you? They'll scream at themselves. What's that all about?
Right. So it's kind of trying to force themselves to overcome that negative internal dialogue that's telling them you're losing, you're screwing up, you're not good enough here, you know? And typically I bet you would argue doesn't work.
It never works.
Right, right.
I always know that it's as soon as I start to hear that or see that, I say it's over because they're in their own heads.
Yeah, that's when you know you've won in a way, right?
Yeah.
No, I mean, the answer here is kind of a longer game than that. You can't change it in an instant. You need to kind of get into a pattern of thinking differently about yourself, the world, the future. The therapy that works most effectively with most people is called cognitive behavioral therapy. The cognitive part is what we're talking about. The way we think and look at ourselves, our world, and the future, mostly ourselves. And if we can shift that negative thinking, we were talking off the air a minute ago about just like kind of coming up with a list of things that you're grateful for about yourself and revisiting that list frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you do that, you kind of have to be pretty tenacious because your subconscious mind is a pretty tenacious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it will hold on to those negative thoughts with everything it's got unless you provide it something to replace those thoughts with.
Right.
And so you want to replace them with, you know, if your overriding thought is, I'm simply not good enough, you can just turn that on your head and say, I absolutely am.
Yeah.
You know, and that might seem corny and cheesy and ridiculous, but if you try it and you held in for 3 weeks, eventually you'd begin to own that.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. So we all have to turn into Stuart Smalley for ourselves and look in the mirror and go, we're good enough. But that, in a way, we do, right?
Oddly enough, when I was in grad school, I remember thinking back to Stuart Smalley and thinking, oh my God, he's doing exactly what we're telling people to do. And he's just like kind of lampooning it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, we have to look at ourselves and say, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me.
I guess you kind of answered what Marge had, but Marge, you have a question or comment for Dr. John Duffy?
Yes, I do. Hi, everybody. Hi. I do. I'm going to try to articulate it kind of to the point. I do have difficulty. I do have anxiety and depression. How do you, doctor, get through the day? I own my own company, a small business, and how do you get to the day without radio, television, you know, every time you used to be able to turn the television on and put on a television, a couple programs in a row and relax and forget about, you know, things going on in your life or in the world and, you know, enjoy it. But it's like constant bombarding of, you know, like medication. Do you have this? Do you have that? You know, all this stuff like that. And then the same with the radio. I love your show, Wendy and Bill, and I listen to the radio all the time. And, you know, there's 25 commercials on, you know, illness and sickness and this and cancer and whatever. So I guess my question is, and I use that cognitive all the time because I did go through a program where that really seemed to help and shift my thinking. But how do you, besides never turning on the television, never turning on the radio, you know, how do you get through that garbage, you know?
That's actually a great question, Marge. I totally get your point. And all the images and everything that comes at us through the media can make us think and really believe, wow, there's something really wrong with me, and maybe there's a pill that can fix this or something like that.
And I
won't recommend that you turn off the radio and the television altogether, but if you took 5 minutes out of your day, there are these apps on meditation that just kind of are intended to take you out of that day-to-day thinking and into a different headspace, for lack of a better word. So if you just took 5 or 10 minutes, sat alone, and this may seem absurd for the first 20 times that you do it, but if you do that and you just listen to yourself think and you consider the way you think, you'll surprise yourself, first of all, with what you think about yourself that might drive some of that anxiety and depression that you feel. You're clearly a really successful person, and yet this kind of owns you a little bit.
Right.
So if you can protect a little time just to focus on that and not pressure yourself to fix it, just kind of listen to your mind and gently replace those thoughts over time. You don't have to do it right the first time. You don't have to do it right the 10th. But if you hang in there for a while, eventually you'll find that you can slowly, and it might feel kind of glacial, real slow, but you will slowly be able to replace those negative thoughts with positive ones. And then some of those images that you see on TV and on the radio that you hear might not be so insidious to you and might not have your attention so much.
Right. And one more thing, I should have put that in my sentence that, you know, guilt. I have a big, like a guilt thing, like, well, why should I be happy to, you know, because there's so much crap going on, you know, like we got this going on in the world and that, you know, there's a guilt, like, well, why should I be happy if everything else is all, you know,
survivor guilt kind of thing.
Yes.
Right? Exactly. Survivor guilt. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So that probably falls into the same thing, you know, just tune it out and, you know.
Well, that I feel a little bit differently about, Marge, because I hear that in my office virtually every day. Like, you know, what right do I have? There are people who are starving out there. There are people, you know, who are in wars. And I think that's kind of a dangerous game to play in your own mind, because then you're not entitled ever to have a negative emotion. And I want you to feel like, well, sometimes I'm not having the best day, and I don't feel great, and that's not the end of the world. That's okay. That doesn't mean a slippery slope down to the depression. That just means you have a range of feelings and emotions, and that isn't the end of the world.
Okay.
Marge, good luck to you.
Thank you. Thanks, you guys. And I'm listening. This is a great show. Thank you.
Oh, you're so nice. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll try and be more positive. There's a text here that's kind of interesting, John.
Yeah.
I agree about giving yourself a break, but then I feel the reason we are all so crappy is because we are not holding ourselves to high enough standards. And when I heard you saying to Marge, it's glacially, you know, very slowly these things are going to happen. I don't know. Do we not challenge ourselves enough?
Right.
Isn't it okay to take things slowly?
It's threading this needle between I'm a good enough person, I'm a worthwhile person, and given that, I expect great things from myself. You know what I mean? I think those can both exist in the same prism, in the same mind. So I actually think I agree with the texture completely that, you know, like, yeah, I think we need to expect a lot from ourselves. The part of the problem is when we think really negatively about ourselves, we undoubtedly underperform.
Sure.
Right. And so that's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. That inner monologue that goes on, that constant reinforcement that you're not good enough, is that a surrogate voice of a parent, a teacher, a coach? You're filling in a gap somehow, aren't you?
Almost always, Bill. When people first report that to me, I always ask them, like, you know, whose voice is it that you hear?
Right.
And it's usually, they can pinpoint that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And it's usually a parent. Sometimes it's a coach. Sometimes it's a teacher.
That's very telling, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. Mm. It is.
Man, I mean, and that's why you have to be careful what you say as a parent. I mean, again, we were talking about trying to help people and women being nurturers. I do try to solve all the problems that come up in our family. And sometimes I'm told, Mom, you can't fix everything.
Right.
Can I just be upset? And I guess that's a great thing. You can be upset.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay to be upset. And it's okay as parents to say, yeah, you know what? Sometimes that stinks. You know, and just join your kids in that instead of fighting it. Because sometimes when you find yourself fighting it, it just goes on and on and on. And sometimes when you just acknowledge how your kids feel, they tend to let it go.
Yeah, that is a great way to do it. Like something bad happened. It's, oh, that sucks. Just even saying that, and then they'll talk more. Undue Anxiety is your podcast. Did I see that it's new and improved or changed?
New and improved. We changed, given along the lines that we are talking about now, right? So Undue Anxiety suggests this negative thinking, right? Anxiety is a negative word. So my wife, Julie, brilliantly came up with the name Better for the podcast, and as such, she is now the co-host of the podcast as well. So we are better with
John
and Julie.
Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, John. Great to see you. That's
Thanks,
Dr. John Duffy. A quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy. Fritz Kagi coming up in just a few
How about
moments.
It?
I'm excited. Stick around. It's WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon.
Kiki.
Thank you, Kiki Gordon.
Are you going by Kiki? Grandma
I don't
Kiki?
Know. I haven't gotten the total approval on that one yet.
I love it.
So
that's instead of Grandma.
Yeah. I have a Mimi, so I thought Kiki would be
Kiki and a Mimi.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you the winner of last night's Democratic primary for the office of Cook County Assessor, and in my opinion, the most fun name to say in all the land, Fritz Kagi joins us right now. Fritz, how are you?
So glad to join you, and so good to have the love for my uniquely Swiss-American name.
Congratulations, first and foremost. I have to tell you a funny...
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I have an 18-year-old son, so he was very excited. This was his first primary, actually first any time he ever voted. And he was listening to our radio program yesterday on his way to school, and when I picked him up, I said, hey, Michael, we got to go vote. And he said, Fritz Kagi.
Mm-hmm.
Because all Bill said yesterday on our show was Fritz Kagi.
It's
so
fun.
I think you owe him a little finder's fee for the win.
Well, hey, thank you so much. And it's been so terrific to have met so many people on the trail and to get that constant reinforcement from voters because they got the final say on this. And people were so engaged on the issues. It really helped us.
Fritz, here's a question I'm sure you get a lot, because I know Wendy and I have asked this of people in the politics game a lot, but why? Why would you want to do this? You know you're subjecting yourself to so much criticism on a daily basis when you run for office. It's always a brutal campaign. Why would you want to subject yourself to something like that?
Well, I'm from here. I grew up in Hyde Park on the south side, and I live in Oak Park, and I've lived all over around the county, and I really care about it. And this stuff is really important. It sounds kind of cut and dried and bland when you're talking about real estate assessments, but what it's really about is equity. It's about how our property tax system lands on each person who lives in the county, and it has a really big impact on people's daily life, driving people out of neighborhoods, forcing some people into foreclosure, how we distribute the property tax burden. It's taking hundreds of millions of dollars out of some communities at the expense of others. So it's really important, and I felt like my background in being a steward and in valuing assets would be perfect for this office, which is that's what it really needs.
I am very familiar with the Cook County Assessor's Office and their website. We have appealed our property tax many a time. I found out the first time that they had listed that we had a garage. We don't have a garage, so that made the property value worth more. Something had to be done, and I'm glad you're willing to jump in on this and get it back or get it organized a little bit better. What can we expect to see from you?
Well, thanks, Wendy. There's a massive amount of work ahead of us. The most important things are to get the proper valuation models in place that are more accurate, fair, take the regressivity out of the system. So downtown commercial properties are dramatically underassessed, report after report shows. And then we have dramatic overassessment in communities that have been most hit by the housing crisis, especially black and brown communities. And every neighborhood of Cook County is regressively assessed. So that means that the more modest your home, the higher the rate you pay. These are all things that we can address within the first couple of years that we're in office. So we come in office in December 2018. We're going to have to live with most of the assessments that the Berrios team came up with in 2019, but we'll have a dramatic impact in 2020, and we can have some impact before then, too.
Fritz, if you wouldn't mind, just quickly give us your take on what took place yesterday with one of your opponents, with Andrea Rayla. What do you make of that yesterday?
Well, she did give me a gracious phone call congratulating us on our victory, and we really appreciated that, as did Joe Berrios. So we had a decisive victory, and you know, none of the other stuff that I've read in the news came up in our conversation. Unfortunate that there was so much back and forth that dragged on and on in the qualifying to get on the ballot process.
But you don't expect her to appeal this?
It didn't come up in our conversation.
No?
Yesterday.
Okay.
And the outcome was very decisive.
Yeah, okay.
I did have an idea I threw out there earlier to put some kind of electronic scroll or something in there if there's any update to the ballots in the future where you don't have to rely on texts or emails and little pieces of paper that are handed out. It could be updated. So something people might want to look at in the future.
There's a wide variety of things they can do. You know, it's complicated because it's divided between the city, which is the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners, and then the Cook County Clerk, which does the suburbs. So you're right that there needs to be work done there.
I know, Fritz, that the next battle you have is to win the general election, the big election that's coming up in November. But then where does it end for you? Because I've already started a Fritz Kiggy for President campaign. I already have an office set up.
Oh, no. You have officially jinxed me. That's the first time anyone has said that.
Oh, no. Sorry about that.
He'll never forget you, Bill.
Yeah.
This stuff is extremely serious.
Yeah.
Very important. I'm not looking on to any. We have a huge amount of work ahead of us that will. You know, there are only 300 people who work in this office. For something that has such a large economic impact, we have to come up with a landing plan, a landing team this spring, summer, and fall. We're going to be focused on that. And then it will require a huge, extraordinary amount of work. We can have a real big impact early by putting in new valuation models, by putting in rules that eliminate this pay-to-play culture that's flourished so much inside the office. We can put in lots of transparency standards very early. The harder part is this ongoing work, like with the data, where you talked about your garage, Wendy, or lack of garage.
Yes.
I forget which.
Lack
which
of.
It is. So, you know, the data that the assessor's office has on each individual home is pretty terrible. A lot of the pictures haven't been updated.
Sometimes the square footage is off.
Yeah, the square footage is off in just about every single home that I'm aware of.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Yep.
The stories.
Yeah.
So that's an ongoing effort. And if you just imagine there'll be just a handful of people on the office who are tasked with updating that, we need to find robust ways to use databases like the multiple listing system that real estate brokers use, CoStar, which is what commercial brokers use to pull data from that to update the data that we have in the office.
Fritz, I'm sure you've heard this criticism. People say, I had my property assessed, and all they did was they drove past the house, and then they wrote down a number. Don't you think it should be more accurate? They should come inside and take a look at the full property?
Well, they could. That will be labor-intensive if you imagine that there are 1.8 million properties and parcels in Cook County. For 300 people in the total office, we have to find a more robust way to scrape data from basically anytime someone sells a house or posts an advertisement to sell a house. There's a lot of data there, and that's the kind of thing that the assessor's office can draw from, not only in the past but ongoing. So we think that's a good idea. And so that's a way that could be automated in a way that wouldn't be very labor intensive. But there's a ton of work that has to be done in that area. I mean, this office hasn't even been telling people how their assessment is calculated, which is a real minimal requirement. Most counties in the state do this, and we ought to be doing that so that this office is accountable for the work that it does for the vast majority of people who don't appeal.
Fritz Kagi on the line with us, Democratic primary winner for the Cook County Assessor's Office. This is probably a really stupid question, but I'm sure more than just myself has it. When your house is assessed and you have a value there, why is it so much different than the appraisal?
Well, because basically they're multiplying and dividing by some pretty obscure numbers. So the number that you're assessed at doesn't bear any obvious relationship to the market price of your home.
No, it's way really lower. It's way different.
Right. But it's all ultimately geared off an estimate of the market value of your home. So they start with the market value of your home, and then they, for a residential, then they say it's 10% of that becomes your assessed value. That's basically the standard that they're supposed to use. And then there's a multiplier that is applied throughout the county if it's systematically above or below that 10% level. So that's sort of a bird's eye view. I don't want to get too much into the weeds and bore everyone else to death, but ultimately that first number where they're estimating the market value of your home is the key thing that this office is doing, and they've got to do a better job of getting that right. Many assessor's offices throughout the United States do a much better job, do a pretty good job of this, and that's what we aspire to.
Can't wait. Hope it changes. And again, you said Fritz Kagi. Kagi is a Swedish name, did you say?
Swiss.
No, Swiss. Swiss. American. I'm part of the burgeoning, teeming, about five people who live in Cook County who are Swiss American.
And you're one of them.
I think
you're
Chef Hans Aschbacher is as well. Them, yeah? I think he's Swiss.
Yeah. Well, Fritz, really quick, I'm just curious. I know you had a grueling couple of months there, but did you get a good night's sleep last night? I bet you slept a little better last night, did you?
We slept a little bit better. We had a wonderful celebration with our supporters together with Chuy Garcia and the slate of candidates that he won. They pulled off a clean sweep, and that was one of the happiest moments last night, was seeing these really super young candidates, Alma Anaya and Aaron Ortiz, to win their race. There's another judge, too, and it was just super to see them because we didn't know how those races would turn out. I'm so happy for them. There are a lot of super young candidates who won last night.
Yeah.
And I went to sleep with a smile on my face, not only because we won, but because they won too.
Absolutely. It's so good to talk to you. That's Fritz Kagi. He is running for the Cook County Assessor's Office for the Democratic Party. And like I always say, there ain't no party like a Kagi party. I've been saying that for years. Fritz, keep up the good work.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Bill.
All right. Absolutely.
Congratulations. I do want to mention there is a text here that I would like to read because it cracks me up. Glad Bill did some research for his vote. I guess if Pokemon was running, he would have voted.
I did vote for Pokemon a few years ago.
It was a write-in.
Yeah, I'm proud of that.
We did do research. It's just a silly name that got in our heads. Oh, my good golly, G. Williker. Did you vote for Snagglepuss a couple years ago for something?
If there's a name that I find particularly entertaining, they might get my vote. I'm not saying that's more important than the job that they'll do, but it helps. Yeah, I voted for Snagglepuss.
Yeah. Did Richard Boykin win?
I don't know if Richard Boykin won. That's
names
a good question.
Names do stick in your head, and then somebody, 847, Bill, I totally voted for Fritz because of you.
Oh, how about that? Richard Boykin has like a, you know, there are certain words that you can only hear Jerry Lewis say,
And Boykin is one of them. I don't know why. I don't know. I'll look it up. I'll find out. I know we don't have a lot of time to go into this, but they have, as has been pointed out in the news, they have named the lineup for Lollapalooza. Finally, it was a highly guarded secret until today. Are you impressed by the
sold
lineup?
Out. They sold out.
They sell out. But in less time than usual. Like, they're used to selling it out within minutes, and it took a little longer this time for the four-day pass.
Oh.
Because a lot of people say, a lot of the music insiders, Wendy, say that the lineup last year wasn't as impressive as usual. But I'm looking at this year's lineup, and the three people I recognize are really good.
I'm excited about Jack White.
Of the White Stripes.
I may go just to see him.
Bruno Mars will be there. Bruno Mars doesn't do
He's
it for
great.
You.
I don't know.
You wouldn't
if I,
go to see
I
him?
I don't know if I need. I can watch him on TV.
Right.
I could.
On the Bruno Mars show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The weekend, are you going to do hair with him?
I may help out
now that
out
Jimmy
with...
Butler's not around.
Yeah,
you guys used
sad.
To do hair together.
Now I may do it for the weekend. He's very talented. I've seen him on a couple of shows. I like him. I don't know that I'd go out of my way just to see The Weeknd, but yeah.
I'd see
good.
Bruno Mars, but he's not going to be the same day as Jack White.
And that's almost where the name recognition for me falls off a cliff.
You know Arctic Monkeys, I
know
think.
Who the Arctic Monkeys are, and I know Vampire Weekend.
Oh, they're here?
Yeah, they'll be on. And Portugal the Man, we've played some of their music on the show. There's one song that they have, that song that's about years in the past. I don't know what it's called, but they keep saying something about 1968 or something. I don't know what the song is, but
oh,
I like it.
I know who Greta Van Fleet is. These are a bunch of like...
I know who Greta Van Susteren is. Is she going to be
not
performing
this year.
At Lollapalooza?
She'll be there next year. These guys are amazing. They're young. They're like maybe 20-ish.
Uh-huh.
And they sound exactly like Led Zeppelin.
Really?
I mean, I'm not
intentionally
kidding.
Intentionally, or it just plays
it
out that way?
It has to be intentionally. I mean, their music end of things is a little different, but this guy sounds so much like Robert Plant, but they're young mm-hmm. rock and rollers. They're pretty good. Greta Van Fleet, but it to me sounds exactly like Led Zeppelin.
That's a good lineage. The name on here that I find most appealing, and there's roughly, what would you say, there's about 50 bands somewhere around there.
A Boogie with the Hoodie.
I like that name, but my favorite one, I hope you'll get the reference because it's tough and it's spelled differently, but Matt Mason. Do you know what that's in reference
yes.
to? There was a toy in the 60s that Ideal made called Major Matt Mason. It was an astronaut.
Yes,
it
space-related.
Yeah.
That's, I knew
so
that.
I don't know how they're paying tribute to that because they're probably in their early 20s, but good for them.
That is a good one.
Zomboy, they'll be there.
You know Franz Ferdinand. They're going to be there.
Yeah, I do know who they are.
Hippie Sabotage. God, no. I love band names.
I don't know those guys.
Cigarettes After Sex.
Is that
a great
name or just a game plan?
No,
for
I
that,
just
that
blurted
week.
Something.
Oh. I find it hard to believe that in the history of music, there was no other band called this, but the Aces will be here. Doesn't that sound like a band name that must have been taken many times in the past?
Right.
Because you have to register, don't you? Isn't there some band registry that you have to sign up with?
No, you use it until somebody who had the name first sues you.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The Vaccines.
I like that name. I love that name. My band, Fritz Kagi, will be out there, Wendy. This is the first time we played Lollapalooza.
Are they opening
excited.
For Franz Ferdinand?
Yes. Yeah. It's a plum position. All right. We'll take a quick break and then find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy down WGN.